Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Pop Life Podcast, today is, I actually know that today's date because I have a meeting tomorrow. So today is March 26th. 2019, so almost April.
Yep. Can you believe, like, the first quarter of the year is already almost over?
It's just flying.
Yeah. Flying.
It's flying. Like, I'm like, yo, it's April. It's April, like, next weekend.
Boogie approaches.
This weekend. And then Easter's like, what? In the weekend?
It's the 21st.
Oh, it's later this year.
Okay. Yeah, it's later.
Okay. How's everybody doing?
I'm good.
I'm fighting a little something. I got Vicks. I've had Vicks on my chest for the past 12 hours.
All right. You take
I'm going to keep it on, too.
You take some castor oil, too?
You've been walking around the house with an onion in a sock.
Some sliced potato on the bottom of my foot. I took some, what is it, Dr. John's, whatever that is, which is basically like, it tastes like castor oil and licorice.
Also, it's the
and
same something. Shit.
Oh, yeah, the same
you're
shit.
Taking that old nigga medication.
Old Negro. I'm not playing with these fools. I already just had the flu a couple of weeks ago. I can't.
What do you even buy that shit?
On the back. That shit comes
with, I bought it on Amazon. I saw some people,
you can't buy that in the store.
Nah, I saw some people talking about it on Twitter. I bought that on Amazon. That's the nastiest shit.
You could probably get it from like one of the bodegas. Yeah. But like the joint, the old joints that still sell the candles and shit. Like, you still with it. If they still run numbers or something in the back, you definitely got hear it from that that dude.
I only got 3 of these left. I can't order them no more.
Them shit's been in there since 1973. Exactly. That's okay.
Box dusty as shit. Box dusty as hell.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But I'm not leaving this house today. The problem is the weather going back and forth. And
it is.
I already have, like, I think I might have said on here before, I am susceptible to ear, nose, and throat issues. And when I go outside in cold or windy weather, it feels like the wind goes directly into my ear. Like, it feels like that shit goes into my head. Mm. So, I was feeling a little drafty yesterday. I was getting that little throat kind of feeling tight and ticklish and whatever. I was like, nope. Went to the medicine cabinet, got that good Vicks.
Yep. Not today, Satan.
Nope, not today, Satan. Listen, old remedies do work. Fuck what you heard.
You know, I got to say peace to something I had never seen before. So I went to Atlanta for one night last week, and I got off the plane at the Hartsfield. And I don't know if people have been to Hartsfield, but to get out, you come, there's like this long escalator that you go up, and that's where people kind of wait for people they're picking up and stuff. Families are there a lot of times, and, you know. And so there was a dude there holding a big-ass cardboard sign, white cat, saying, like, I don't remember the guy's name on it, like, Eddie, will you marry me? And I was like, oh, shit, okay, that's different. You know what I'm saying? I hadn't seen that in life and live before. He's holding a big-ass sign that we know with a big smile on his face. He's got, like, I think it's like a girl who obviously was his friend or maybe his sister. She's, like, there, like, with her camera. So whoever, that wasn't his name. I'm just going to say Eddie's name. Was kind of like maybe two or three people behind me. So I was like, oh, I want to see this. You know what I'm saying? So I stop, and he's holding the sign up, and then Eddie comes up, and obviously Eddie's got this big cheesy grin on his face. Aww. Or whatever. And then he's, you know, blushing. And then old boy, like, drops to one knee and pulls a ring out, flips the box up, and puts a ring on his man's finger.
Aw, that's nice, though.
It was nice. I wanted to take pictures, but I was like, am I being
You don't want to intrude on their moment.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
that was at the airport.
They had the airport.
You're right. That's fair. But I wonder if, you know, there's a joke about how quickly lesbians get engaged. I wonder if it's the same for gay men. I was about to say, like, they might have just been dating for, like, a couple months. But I think that's that. What a great way to get off the plane. Good luck to them.
Yeah. God bless them, and good luck to them. You know what I'm saying? And peace to him and him. And you know, they have a nice wedding. Y'all got any shout outs?
I did, and now I've forgotten.
Okay.
Yeah, same. I actually had one this week, but whatever. I mean,
maybe. Oh, shout out to Idris. He has a, let me turn my email off. He has a Netflix series that launched last week. It's called, I can't remember the name, but he's talking basically
about Charlie.
Yeah. Turn Up Charlie.
Chasing Charlie.
Turn Up Charlie.
Turn Up Charlie. Okay.
Turn Up Charlie. He's basically this washed out DJ. This has been DJ who had like one really massive hit in the 90s. And is trying to reinvigorate his career. But what's new about it is that he plays a complete loser. Like, he lives in his aunt's house. And it's set in London. So, you know, he's speaking in his accent the whole time. And it's Idris being funny, which I don't think we get to see a lot of. Mm-hmm. And I binged it one day. And I mean, listen, it's not going to win any awards, but I think it was enjoyable. So if you're in the house looking for something to binge and you want to look at Idris for 10 episodes, you know, there you go. Knock yourself
out. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, again, not to, you know, belabor this point, but kind of like being between, you know, cribs and not being, you know, stable yet. Like, my TV, I'm so off. Like, I haven't watched Netflix. Like, I have so many things that I want to see. Like, I want to see that Idris thing. I want to see that Ben Affleck movie. I still haven't watched The Umbrella Academy. It's like so many things that I've been hearing are great that I just can't seem to just lock in and watch. I'm just off, man. So I need to, once I do get settled, I'm going to like take a weekend or two and just really binge out. I still haven't seen Us. You know,
I still have to go see Us, actually.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
The spoilers are coming.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm ducking and dodging spoilers left and right online. Like, I'm just, you know, but it's getting to the point, you know, niggas are like, by the full week, it's going to be having full dissertations.
What I'm hoping, though, is like with Get Out, I didn't see Get Out for months. And even
really?
Though
are people you took
were
that
having,
long?
Well, even though people didn't were having conversations about it, it wasn't the kind of plot line that could be spoiled. You know what I mean? Like, I was seeing the memes, I was seeing all of that, and I still didn't understand what was happening. But, you know what I mean? It didn't ruin the movie for me. But with Us, I've been avoiding any articles or in-depth discussions about it.
Yeah, because everybody we haven't had a conversation about it, but everybody who's seen it tells me, it's like they can't even really tell you what the movie's about because that gives away the plot. Like, right. It gives away spoilers. Like, so I really don't even know what the movie is about at all. Like,
right.
Because everybody says, like, well, I can't even tell you, bro, because that's going to give away a lot.
But that's how it was with Get Out, too. Like, you really couldn't.
Yeah.
You really couldn't describe the plot, you know? So yeah. I'm going to catch it at some point this week.
Yeah. I'm going to catch it. But, yeah, I want to say peace to that. Let's just jump on into it, man.
You know what?
Go ahead, bro.
Shout out to Mr. Otis.
Oh, yeah, you went to see Ain't Too Proud of Bed.
Oh, yeah.
I went to see Ain't Too Proud.
Oh, yeah, give you a little review and all that. Go ahead, so, start with that.
So, went opening night. You know, obviously, opening night is going to be a little more extra to it. You know, it's a play. Furthermore, it's a black play. So that 7 o'clock shit was dead. I don't think they started the show until maybe about 7:35, 7:40.
Miss Irm and them still walking in late. Yeah. Which one's the season? I think these is awesome.
You got two, you got C or D.
We got four. We got 4 and 5. It's our 4 and 5.
So, the show, you know, for many of the listeners that listen, or if you don't know, like, I'm a real purist about the Temptations. Like, I really, really listen to them.
Yes.
The story is really designed very much like the VH1 show in that it's narrated by Otis. And it really doesn't cover anything new. Per se, I mean, he touches on a couple of things, but he doesn't really touch on anything new. It's really sort of the same story. The young men that are performing are Broadway trained. They're Alvin Ailey trained. Like, they're real dancers. They're real, you know, very structured singers. And you notice that, like, very early if you're a purist. There was a rawness that the Temptations had, a controlled rawness that they had that you can't, you know, this on Twitter. You can only get a voice like that from like drinking bathtubs and being some
right, exactly. Right.
You're like 11 years old, right?
Right,
like,
right. Nothing,
you don't learn that soul by lessons.
Yeah.
And you can sort of tell that. And these guys didn't have very powerful. The other thing about the Temps is they had incredibly powerful voices.
All five of them.
Like, dude, like there are times where there's no mic.
Yeah.
And they are, their voices are booming.
Yeah.
They were big men.
And that comes from singing on corners for years.
Yes. Singing on corners. Singing in churches when there was no
mic, no sound.
There was no minister of music, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
And you had to sing over a choir. So you had to really be able to sing.
You had to really be able to sing. And so there was also, the other thing that was sort of missing was like the Temps had this air of smoothness that, again, it's very hard to duplicate. Like they were these really, you know, handsome, charismatic guys who had a smoothness even with their movements, right? Like even with their dance steps, there was a hipness, there was a swagger to it. And, you know, these guys coming from, you know, traditional Broadway backgrounds, they're just not really able to deliver that.
They don't have that swag.
They don't have that. And I don't you know what, it's hard to say. I don't necessarily know that they don't have it as much as when you've trained your entire life to do one thing one way, it's very difficult to go completely against the grain. It's sort of the same idea that the musicians were reluctant when James Brown was telling them and giving them directions, right? Because musically,
it doesn't make sense.
Technically, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of, it's almost like that's kind of what you get. They don't seem like they're all squares, right? So you kind of get the sense, you know, of that. But, you know, there was plenty of, you know, God bless the choreographer. They was putting a little too much sauce on the choreography. I was definitely waiting for the classic My Girl steps, right? Which everyone knows, everyone identifies. And that didn't really happen, but the performers were great. Listen, it's an enjoyable show. It's not a bad show. You're going to have a good time. But you don't really learn anything new. Well, not that much. I mean, peace to Mr. Otis, because he definitely let another cat out of the bag. It was like, my nigga, like, Mr. O. Like,
you want me to tell all that?
Oh, he says on the reunion tour, he says, I go into the room and everybody was free basing.
Wow.
Damn. I'm like, nigga, like, ain't nobody know Melvin was free basing.
Right.
We just thought it was David and Eddie.
I didn't know Dennis was necessarily basing, but I think when we saw that jaw and don't look any further.
Yeah, yeah.
We knew Dennis was doing something.
Oh yeah.
Moving every which way.
So but you know, it the Temps really is a sad story. And I do want to give a shout out to Mr. Otis, man, because like first of all, he had the best seats in the house. They were a couple rows behind us.
Right.
And Mr. Gordy was there.
Oh, really?
Shelly Berger. Yeah, yeah. And Mary Wilson was there as well.
Okay.
So it was really special. You know, again, those guys gave an incredible performance. All of the performers were great. But again, if you're a purist, if you really, really fuck with them heavy like how I do, it's going to be difficult on the performance end because that's they don't really deliver that.
That feels like when I think I actually talked on the show about when me and mom went to see Motown, the musical in London a few years ago on the West End. And we were really upset because they just weren't tight. Like that's the thing. Like the Temps were tight and the Temps, all those Motown groups were tight and precise with the footwork. Like it was super tight and they weren't tight and controlled. And in my opinion, it's way too easy to watch. Like, it's way too easy to study Temps footage and get that shit together. To me,
they have if you really fuck with them, they have a London live show that's on YouTube. It's about an hour long, like
from what, like the '60s or whatever.
This is no. This is from like 1988.
Of course, so it's when they did the reunion.
No. No. This is after the reunion. Okay. This is Dennis had come back, because Dennis had came back from like 87 to like 89 or something.
Okay.
So this was right when he had come back. They had done some touring in London. So this is like this is maybe like the C team.
Okay.
Of the Temps at this point. This is Dennis. This is Richard Street, Otis, Melvin, obviously, and Ron Tyson, who had come to the group in like 83. Mm-hmm. But like that was the other thing that was sort of missing, is that the thing about the Temptations is they have this sort of expansive career. And what I thought I would see was something a little more closer to date. They really kind of ended in the same way
the movie did. Yeah.
It felt, you know, look, I don't want to take shots because I'm not a playwright and I don't want to make it seem like I'm disparaging this person, but it felt a little lazy, right? Like the writing felt a little like they kind of just took what
it's
was
the, it's the greatest hit story.
Exactly. And it was his story, right? So there's this very narrowed, they definitely showed that Eddie was not like with the shits. Eddie was right. Like definitely digging back at Otis and not really just taking whatever he was saying. But, you know, it played on the other tropes and shit that we knew, that, you know, Melvin was always sort of on Otis's side. It was always like the two factions. It was always like the leads and then Otis and Melvin.
Right.
And so it played to that. And I mean, look, God bless. Otis is 77 years old.
And he outlived all them niggas.
He looks great. And yes, he outlived all you niggas. And I'm going to tell a story.
Yeah.
And my way.
And then you're here to dispute it.
Because I'm 77, nigga. It ain't but Smokey and like Barry.
Yeah. Barry,
like,
that's it.
Yeah, Jenny left. And Diana and Mary. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the other ones is like
in the past. That's it.
Yeah, but it's pretty much gone. You know what I'm saying?
I think it's worthy of going to see again if you're not necessarily a purist. Peace to Aunt Penny, and peace to Jeff for holding off his reviews.
Yeah, I ain't want to mess it up for you, bro.
The one spoiled it for me, but I enjoyed it, man. We had a good time. And actually, peace to a couple of the guys that were Leon was there.
Okay, that makes sense. He was in a movie.
Yeah, the dude who played the first lead singer, Bryant, Eldridge Bryant, whatever. Yeah, remember there was a lead singer prior to David Ruffin.
Right.
Yeah, the guy who played him was there as well.
Okay.
So it was a few. You know, it was good. It felt good. You know what I'm saying? Like the spirit in the building felt good. The folks on stage felt good. They looked engaged. It's definitely worthy to go check it out.
Okay. Cool. All right. I'm going to see it on the 19th, actually. So I'll give my kind of review, although I don't think it'll be much different than what you and Penny said, but I'll just give a little follow up review when I go see it as well. I guess I have one more shout out before we get started. Go ahead.
Especially because I know Sean was really into the Serial podcast. So HBO is airing, actually the series ends next week. It's a 4-part series called The Case Against Adnan Syed.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So it's basically about the same young man who's the subject of the Serial podcast, but it picks up on stuff that happened after Serial ended.
Okay.
And it really exposes, like, the case was flawed as shit. And there's a lot of instances in which in which the podcast exposed discrepancies in the prosecution's case, and stuff that other witnesses had come forth and said. So at this point, at least, I don't know if it's current right now, I didn't check, but as of the last episode of this limited series, his conviction has been overturned and he's facing a new trial. So it's worth watching, especially if you listen to Serial and thought you knew everything, because like there's one girl who said she didn't realize she was Adnan's friend Jason. She didn't realize she was who was the linchpin of the case. She didn't realize she was his alibi until she heard the Serial podcast. Like there's all kinds of stuff going on where people like once I listened to the podcast, I realized blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So if you are a fan of Serial, I think it's worth watching. It's on HBO.
And also, I mean, another thing, I haven't seen it, but I was trying to I guess I'll watch it this week, but I'm going to watch this Elizabeth Holmes thing. I know that's been pretty popular.
That shit is cray.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. So let's hold that because I want to watch it.
It's like Firefest.
I know you saw it and you have a lot of thoughts on it. And I want to watch it. So I want to have a discussion. So we'll discuss that next week for sure. Let's jump right into it, man. Peace to Mon Ami Entertainment. They premiered Real Housewives. They premiered Love and Hip Hop Atlanta last night. It was a blockbuster premiere episode. It was so much going on. It was two episodes, but it was so much going on between the episodes. Like, it's so much happening.
They came out Atlanta never lets me down, ever. Like, I love New York, but no city can touch Atlanta. They never let me down.
And the thing about last night, yes, it was some fuckery. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot of fuckery because Atlanta definitely carries the fuckery. But I didn't really watch last season, so I might be speaking a bit out of turn. But it felt like even with the fuckery, it felt like a lot of the subjects that they were talking about underneath the fuckery was real shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like real shit. Like, you know, we had Scrap meeting his father. We had the whole skin bleaching thing. Right. We had... somebody trying to shoot Mimi. We had, you know, Stevie doing the fuckery and introducing his daughter to his now wife Faith before Mimi even knew about it. We had, you know what I'm saying? We had, Carly Red and coming to find out that she's, you know, got all these kind of freak issues going on with her quote unquote friend. It was like a lot of, you know, the Kirk and Rashida, where Kirk brings the kid to the family. Like,
right.
it was like some real heavy shit going on. Like, masked in fuckery. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of last season, too, especially with Kirk and Rashida, because the paternity plot line was underlining. Rashida really wasn't fucking with Kirk, like, at all. Kirk was out of the house.
Yeah.
And they were
woman pregnant.
And they were fighting, and the kids were involved. Like, it was a whole thing. And I'm trying to remember what was going on with Stevie and Mimi, but Mimi has a new girlfriend. That's what she was talking about.
Yeah, Mimi has a lesbian relationship, but
yeah.
That's just been going on for at least a year now.
It's been for a little while now. They're still together. But I think, yeah, there's definitely fuckery, but there's definitely some rush. These people are old as hell. It's kind of like with New York. These people are old as hell. And peace to Mon Ami Entertainment for realizing that we don't want to just hear about text messages and, you know,
and going to brunch and
drinks on people just randomly.
I'm a rapper now, and you know, and
yeah, like there's some real life shit happening in everybody's lives, and there's always a couple of characters still give you the foolishness, like Lord Jesus, Mama D, bless her heart.
Jeez,
woo, Mama D is true to character. I'll give her that.
Yes. Yes.
She done had some work done.
Yes.
She came in the 50, like, what?
Is Mama D claiming only 50?
She said she 50-something.
Yeah, because Scrappy is in his mid-30s.
He said he was. She said, I think she said 50.
Because Scrappy got to be at least, what, 33, 34 now? I mean, that could mean she's like 54, at least, 55. Yeah, but is Ernest still around?
As of this episode, no. You know it'll come out, though.
No, because, yeah, they mentioned something on the previews about, I think Mama D was arguing with somebody.
It's Bam, I think it's Bam's mom.
Bam's mom, yeah, Bam's mom. And she said something about Ernest.
Okay, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. So what did you think about the whole thing with... I guess we could start in order. Let's start with the skin bleaching thing
with Spice.
Spice, yeah.
So I understand her desire to get her skin bleached. I don't understand why she's trying to make it seem like it's an American. To me, it felt like she was trying to make it seem like it's an American thing, and it's not.
It's actually bigger in Jamaica and in Africa, in Nigeria. India.
I mean, and granted, colorism is an American thing. I'm not trying to deny that.
And they bleach skin here, too.
And there are people who bleach skin here, but it's not a phenomenon
yeah.
the way it is in other countries. It's not, it's not a booming part of the skincare business the way it is in other countries. Because in America, a lot of that stuff is illegal. It's banned. Yeah. It's not FDA approved, right? Yeah. So she first goes to, I guess, a dermatologist, an esthetician, something like that. And the dermatologist is like, before you do something this extreme, I want you to get a psychological evaluation. And she's offended. But like, that's 100% on point.
Yeah.
You know? Then she decides.
Can't go back, B.
Right. But what I didn't understand was, so then she shoots this video and she has on all this pancake makeup to replicate what she would look like if she got her skin bleached. Mm-hmm. She looks full white woman. Like, she didn't go light skin.
Yeah, she looked
crazy.
Went
white. Right?
I didn't know who she was.
Yeah, she looked crazy. And the girls.
First I was like, who is that? I don't know who that is.
And Rashida, Mimi, Carly all come. Now, granted, Rashida, Mimi, and Carly are all, I wouldn't call them light skin, but they are all brown. They're all brown skin.
They're light, like, they're like a light brown.
Yeah, they're like a caramel somewhere in there. They might be brown, like my complexion, maybe a little bit lighter.
Yeah.
So, you know, there definitely is like a kind of, especially in the South, there's a bit of a privileged point of view there. I get it. But I really didn't, they're looking at her like, bitch, what are you doing? Right? She's trying to tell them it's the same as body augmentation, extreme body augmentation, like Lil' Kim Lo's body augmentation, maybe. But just regular, like, I got my tits done.
Yeah, I got my ass lifted. That ain't the same thing.
And, but I also didn't understand her point. Like, she was saying that she was doing it to try to prove the hypocrisy of color. Like, I didn't understand. She was trying to make it like it was a political statement, but I didn't understand what the statement was. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to bleach my skin because y'all made me bleach my skin. I still don't understand what kind of statement she was saying, because the song she was doing the video for is called Hypocrisy.
Black Hypocrisy.
Black Hypocrisy. And I don't understand. I don't understand the way she was trying to justify it as though it were like a socio-political stance. That's what I don't get.
Yeah. I know this is a big thing, colorism and bleaching. As a matter of fact, when I still get all my soap and my lotions and whatnot from the Africans. And every time I go in, I got to make sure I ain't grabbing a skin bleach and soap. Because, you know what I'm saying? I got to look on the box.
Right,
to make sure.
Right.
But they got them. It ain't no, you got to ask them in the back. Like, it's out. It's like skin bleaching soap. Like, you can buy, you know, a roll.
Yeah, you go try to buy some cocoa butter because Palmer's makes one. You go try to buy some cocoa butter, you fuck around and accidentally get a bleach.
Exactly. So, you know what I'm saying? So, it's upfront and not looked down upon it in certain communities. But I understand that, but again, I still quite understand. It's almost like she feels like if she gets a lighter skin, that she's going to be the successful artist all of a sudden. And that's not the case. It'll just look kind of crazy. And,
at all. I know Sean ain't going to say nothing, but like, if I could make a suggestion to Mon Ami Entertainment, it would be to bring Amara, what's her name? Amara La Negra.
Oh, from Miami. Mm-hmm.
From Miami to come talk to homegirl, do a little cross, a little show cross, whatever.
Cross branding.
Because she, you know, fought the colorism fight, like, on behalf of dark skin. Not even and dark skin being Afro Latina at that. So I think, like, somebody needs to sit Spice down and be like, this ain't gonna help your music career. Like,
it's not
first
at all.
First of all, get the music right.
Well, there's that. You know what I'm saying? Right. The jams ain't really popping. But
right. She's trying to do some whole other shit.
I don't know. And then, so what do we think about, what do we think about Kirk and Rashida and the little kid coming to integrate into the family?
I want to say I don't understand why Rashida took Kirk back, but they got 80,000 kids. So let me not say that. But Kirk is such a fuck nigga. And I just don't. This might change him because he might get shook. But, like, I don't really see it changing him.
I don't feel like he's going to get shook.
It's a whole baby. And you fucking do deny the hell out of that shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think there might end up being. But the mother's really young. And, you know, Rashida is a seasoned mom. And it looks like Rashida is going to try to step in and be a little bit of a mother figure to this kid. So I see some potential beef popping off with the real mama I can't remember that child's name.
Yeah, because there was already reason because the kid wasn't potty trained. Remember, Rashida right away was like, why are you still wearing pull-ups at 2 years old?
The kid was like, get the fuck up off me.
Yeah, exactly.
At two, the kid was like, I'm going to need you to stand back.
Exactly. So you already see Rashida kind of being like, oh, you don't really know how to be a mother. Let me take this over.
Right. And Kirk is playing it up because he's like, the baby's always with his grandmother. Yeah. And blah, blah, blah. She's always out, blah, 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 blah. But, you know.
I think Kirk would feel like, I got over. I weathered a storm, but I got over it. She's taking care of the baby now. And maybe I wouldn't be surprised if he'd slide up and throw another one in the mix. Like, he's like, why not? She obviously ain't going nowhere.
Jesus.
You know what I'm saying? It'll be a little bit uncomfortable, but whatever. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. That was really interesting. I mean, everybody, as you know, you get older, you realize, obviously, everybody's, you know, marriage or relationship has their own things and own parameters. You cannot try to ever put your parameters on what other people do.
Yeah.
That doesn't work for me. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I just feel like you couldn't publicly embarrass me. Not just publicly embarrass me, but embarrass me in a way that's been preserved for posterity that my kids can go back and watch. You can't do that to me, but so many times. Yeah. Like, we can't do that.
Yeah, so. And what we think about Stevie and Mimi and Faith?
I think that Mimi will always approach anything Stevie does with a certain amount of anger, and deservedly so, because Stevie be fucking her over, but the rage comes out so fast. Ooh, it comes out so fast.
Well, to me, that rage is showing me that that she's still in love with him.
You said you missed. I think it was last season. You said you didn't watch last season. They had a moment last season where Mimi got really real with him about how him getting with Jocelyn made her feel less than and made her feel broken and like really fuck with her self-esteem. And that was, I think, a real moment of honesty between them. I don't even know if she... I don't think she still wants Stevie.
She still loves him. I think she still wants him.
Right. I think it's more just like... She's still... Like, she really resents everything he's put her through. Because he's put her through some shit. You know what I mean? And so I get that. And there's some anger. I mean, there's definitely still some love there, or there wouldn't be that much rage there. But I don't know if she's still in love with him, but there's definitely still, like, she still cares. When you don't care, you don't care. You know what I mean? Like, at all. Faith is definitely trying to check him.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Faith is definitely going to check him. And last season, so when they had that conversation, did Stevie really hear her, or did he do the goofy shit and make a joke or something? Like,
I think he heard her at the moment, but you know, Stevie is Stevie. Like, he's not, like, I might have this real moment with you, but that don't mean it's going to continue.
It ain't going to last.
Right. And you know, I think that he does like tweaking Mimi a little bit, because the one thing that she can't do with Faith, like her thing with Jocelyn was always like, you know, Jocelyn's trash, she's classless, you know, she's whatever. And mm-hmm. Mimi used to try to kind of lord her, I guess, more dignified womanhood over Jocelyn, and she can't do that with Faith.
Like, not at all. No, not at all.
At all. Like, you can't talk shit about Faith.
Exactly.
And I think Stevie's enjoying that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, so he's going to play with that a little bit. And, you know, also Stevie is still Stevie. Like, she's mad at him and he's smiling. You know what I mean? And talking about, with your finger waves.
And black mothers matter. And
yeah,
all that.
You know, but Faith is definitely, I think, like, not here for his foolishness. And she does chide him gently. You know, not crazy, but like, all right, nigga, you need to get your shit together.
Yeah, you bugging. You know what I'm saying?
I'm curious to see how it'll play out.
Yeah. And then one last one. What did we think about, what's it called? Carly Red and the
Dudu?
Pooh Hicks. And
I wasn't even really paying attention to that, because Pooh's new. I didn't even know where that storyline was coming from. I think if Carly said she didn't do whatever Pooh said she did, I believe Carly, because I think Carly would admit to the shit if she did.
I think Carly's lying.
You do? But Carly don't seem to ever have been shamed to admit
I think Carly's lying. I think, you know, Pooh said, so it's not like a secret, Pooh said on the show last night that her and her husband, you know, definitely get down crazy. They have crazy threesomes. He fucks mad chicks. She fucks mad chicks. Like, separately. and right. together, it seems like it's a kind of big old kind of
sexual. Which I just never would imagine that for Hiram.
Me either, for Hiram, exactly. I would never imagine Hiram marrying, but whatever, you know what I'm saying? Again, different strokes. But
looks like she's had a lot of work done, that woman.
A ton, because she's not young.
She's scary looking.
Yeah, she's not old, but she's not young. She's
right.
Looks like she's definitely in her mid to late 40s, like, because Hiram's in his 50s.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they've been married for a long time. So, but I don't know. I just think it was like, yo, she's hanging out and, you know, turning into some big freak fest or whatever. I don't know, man. It's just, I don't know. Wait, one more thing. What do you think? I actually like the fact that the scrap storyline started off, you know, I don't know where it's going to go. It was pretty serious.
Scrap's
it was
like a family storyline. Situation is so crazy. Imagine everybody in your family is a felon. Everybody.
Everybody
except like this sister you had no idea you had. Like, yeah.
And he just seems, last night anyway, he just seemed to be kind of like worn out by everything. Like I'm tired of my mom acting this way. I'm tired of my mom lying to me. He just seems like he's tired.
And it's, you know what I'm saying? His mom is such an old street chick. Like, that's the thing that's hard. Like, she really was like, I heard in the streets.
Yeah.
So daddy was dead. So I said he was dead. What are you talking about?
He didn't bother to do no type of investigation.
I heard in the streets.
He was dead.
So and I he just was said, dead. That's what the streets has said. Girl. Yeah,
exactly.
So I just
kept it pushing. Like, what? You didn't decide to do no investigation, call his sister his cousin or somebody.
Go over to the house. Something.
Unbelievable.
But he said she did. The baby that's been born, like, exactly. No, like, it's all just child
crazy. But he, you know, they wrote me in, so I'm there, with bells on, and I'll be watching the season. So peace to Mona Me Entertainment, as always, for roping my ass in again. As soon as I think it's over for me, I'm like, oh shit, I'm gonna watch this shit. God damn it. I want to mention another show that I don't know if either one of you watched, but it's actually really good. Owen has a show called Family or Fiance. It comes on after Ayanna.
I've seen the promo.
Yeah, it's a really good show. I thought it was going to be kind of goofy, but it's actually really good. So the premise of the show is they bring a couple in who's in there. They tend to be young. I think there are some older couples later in the season, but the first three episodes, the couples were young. And obviously the couple's engaged to be married, and their families either maybe have never met or don't quite get along. And so they bring three members from each family into this house, and it's a house like they rent in California. And they kind of spend some time there talking about their reservations as to why the couple should not get married. And, you know, there's some family members that say, like, no, I support their marriage, and I think they should get married. And it's a kind of a thing where they kind of, like, really have to hash through all the issues that they have with their family to get the blessing to be married. And I thought it was just going to be kind of goofy, but they actually dig pretty deep on the show. Like, and the interesting thing about it is, like, there's a therapist on the show who kind of starts the show with the couple and talks about some stuff. But then the therapist has to come back again to the end of the show. So the show is really the families hashing this shit out amongst themselves. It's not like they're being guided, or like with Ayanna, where there's all these kind of, you know, things to do. They're just doing it all on their own. But it's very good. I really enjoy it. Two of the couples decided to not get married. A couple this week actually decided to get married after a lot of turmoil. But I mean, one Saturday night, if y'all ain't doing shit, you should check it out. It's actually pretty good. It's a pretty good show.
That's interesting.
That sounds messy. Yeah, it's messy, but it ain't like messy to the point, and not yet anyway, to the point where people are like fighting and nothing like that. But it definitely gets messy, and like shit be coming out, and it's like, oh shit, people cheating. You know, this stuff comes, it's kind of wild. It's just kind of, it's good. It's a good show. So I just want to mention that. And I also wanted to mention, today it came out that your boy Jesse Smollett had all his charges dropped on his case.
I don't even know what to think about none of this story no more. I can't.
But it's interesting because I'm gonna let you go, bro. But I just want to say one quick thing about it. What I'm finding interesting is that Eddie Johnson, who's the Chicago PD superintendent, and Rahm Emanuel, who's, you know, still the acting mayor, are like, we're actually blindsided by this. They didn't know this was happening. So they didn't realize that. Yeah, they didn't know. So they're in the news like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? So it's really a lot of moving parts. It's kind of weird. But go on, Sean. What are you going to say?
Well, there are a couple of things. One, I mean, that doesn't... we all thought that 16 charges was a bit ridiculous and they were overcharging him and going a little too crazy. But two, it also specifies that he relinquishes the bond to the city of Chicago. So the 10 grand that he put up now goes into their coffers.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't get any of that back. They also, you know, obviously with dropping the charges, I mean, look, the reality is this. Jussie is in a position that he was not willing to take a plea.
Mm-hmm.
And because he was not willing to take a plea, it meant that basically they were going to have to open up their books. And because how they've handled themselves in this investigation was not on the up and up, it was going to leave them exposed. And you have to take in damage control at that point. I kind of liken it to everybody being in a circle and everybody having their pins out of the grenade and everybody saying, we're all going to put our pins back in the grenade.
right.
We're all going to walk away from this right now because that's really what this is about. Like, I'm not pressed and I don't use this as a standard to say whether or not I believe his story. I don't believe his story. I did not believe his story. I think that Chicago PD botched this entire investigation. I think they were part of the leaks. I think that they had underhanded shit going on. And I think that they have a ton of other cases that they would have been exposed to had they been able to link those leaks with the PD and the DA's office.
That makes sense.
And Jussie has the means to do so. Right. True. We're not talking about a poor person in Chicago.
True.
Who's just going to kind of be happy to, you know, take his 90 days in jail in the county and be done with it. You know, that's not really what's going to happen here. So I think that the best thing for them to do, I don't think that they would make this decision. Also, too, I think what also played a part in the position was that he doesn't have a record at all. So this would have all happened, and let's just say for the sake of numbers, like this guy could have been convicted on like 9 of those 16 counts. He basically would have gotten community service.
Yeah, because he doesn't have priors.
Right.
So they basically said, listen, he's done volunteer work in the community. He's basically giving that money to the city of Chicago. You know, at this point, we're going to let bygones be bygones. I mean, listen, a part of me, I never want to see a person in jail for something like this. I don't think that what he did.
He deserved jail time.
Especially on 16 counts. Are you fucking kidding me?
Or to be down in Cook County.
Yeah.
Which is not a joke.
They would have been singing to some of my old lady on the phone down there.
word. Hey, Jussie. Sing for my lady, my nigga.
So I'm glad that this has panned out, but this doesn't make me believe that there wasn't anything happening. And as well as, you know, listen, people go through prosecutions all the time and a person is innocent. So, you know, it's always interesting to see the line in the sand when it comes to the justice system, right? Mm-hmm. When the black man gets off, this is the right way. The justice system is working. Everything is fine. And in the moment we go to jail, it's like the justice system's crooked.
Yeah.
I mean, like we got to pick one, bro.
Pick a side.
So again, I'm definitely didn't want to see him in jail. Also, definitely didn't think he was being truthful and honest. You know, I still don't know what's happening. Nobody showed me the sandwich. I don't know where the sandwich
is. Yeah, exactly. Did he get the meatball or did he get the Italian stuff? What did he get?
Where's the receipt? Where's the footage of him ordering at the Subway? You know, when you poking at the window.
Nigga said,
exactly.
I need the extra jalapenos, my nigga.
No. Put them on there.
So again, God bless. Glad he's not going to jail. Hopefully they could put this behind him. But yeah, Chicago PD. This is one of those times where, I've always said, it's such thing as shutting the fuck up sometimes. And this is, and sometimes it's a good time to shut the fuck up. And this sounds like this is one of those times where everybody needs to shut up.
I just know. I don't disagree with anything you said, but I just don't know. Obviously, we're not from Chicago, so I don't understand anything about how the politics work there. But it's just really interesting that that decision was made without telling Eddie Johnson or the mayor. That's the part I'm like, really? Who made that decision? Because Eddie's the head of the whole shit. So like, how can somebody make that decision and not tell the boss? I don't know.
I think sometimes that's done. Listen, a DA's job is also going to be to protect that person and protect that police force, because they got to go on there and be the prosecutor in those cases, in real cases, murder cases, rapes, robberies, real cases, right? So, you know, I can understand if a DA has that pressure to have to make that decision. Also, I don't necessarily believe that they didn't know. I mean, I think they might be playing country dumb. I don't know.
You can't put it up past nobody. Eddie mad as shit, but I don't know what that
is. It's good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You fall on a sword. I'm gonna play mad for a day. By Wednesday, it's gonna be, listen, the DA made a decision. I have to trust their decision. We're gonna follow in the footsteps. We're gonna put all of this behind us. We have bigger crime. We have bigger issues plaguing the city of Chicago. This is not something, you know. The city of Chicago doesn't benefit by putting Jussie Smollett in prison for this. Da 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 da.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess piece of Chicago. While we're talking about shit like this, like, I just want to mention, the horrible, video of this guy, Mark Gomez, kicking this woman on the 2 train. Which everybody filmed and nobody did anything about. But the story goes that he was on the 2 train. It's coming out. He's on the 2 train with his girlfriend and, I don't know if it's their child, but a child. And according to the girlfriend, the woman who was obviously mentally disturbed, and people have said that she's been, I guess she was a teacher or something years ago, but she eventually, like, her mental illness took over, and she was evicted from her apartment. And people know she's had mental issues for quite a while. She said something about she was going to stab him because I guess they tried to sit the little girl next to her on the train, and then she's going to stab him and stab the little girl. And so they moved, and the woman kept talking because that's what, you know, mentally, you know, impaired people will do. Right. Oh, I'm going to stab you anyway. You better get out of here. You know, that type of shit. But nothing really justifies, you know, him doing to her what he did. You know what I'm saying? Right. The woman didn't try to stab anybody. She didn't pull a knife on anybody. She didn't lunge or reach anybody. She's just rambling, you know, incoherently on the train. He got caught. He's actually a chef in some restaurant in Tribeca. He got caught a day or two later. I think he's still up in Rikers now. And, you know, I guess they're trying to figure out a way to, you know, spin it so, like, he doesn't get the full charges, because he looks like he's about to go to jail and he's about to be fucked up in jail. But I mean, you just start to see more and more of these videos where wild shit's happening and nobody's doing shit but filming. It's crazy. Nobody's trying to stop nothing.
I will say this, as somebody who frequents, you know, the MTA system, it's hard to decide when you're going to jump in when some shit is popping off in New York, because you never know what direction that shit could go in.
Yeah, you're right.
For real.
You're right.
So it is hard to say whether you're going to do at least anything more than, like, shout, stop it, or something. Like, to physically insert yourself, that's not always...
I think that there is... I mean, for me, I agree with that, and I don't take the subway often, but that is something, just in general, as a rule of thumb, like, do I get involved here? Do I step in here? And I think that as a man, particularly as a Black man, I think that there's a certain line in the sand that we all kind of feel in our gut.
Right.
I don't know that any of those people on that train, and I'm not disparaging them, but I don't know that any of those people on that train were Black men of age. I don't know that I can't imagine there's ever a scenario that occurs and Jeff is there and doesn't interject. Right.
Yeah, so what the fuck are you doing, son?
Like at the minimum, at minimum, you sort of put yourself between them two, right? Like, yeah. I just feel like there's a certain, and when I say of age, I'm talking about a young man, a man that's able to move, defend himself, handle himself. That's an elder. This is also another thing too that we have to remember. Like a part of this is that we just don't really see the humanity in homeless people.
And
if that was a woman that was properly groomed and didn't have a ton of bags and all those sorts of things, I don't necessarily know that this plays out in the same way.
Right.
And, it's unfortunate, but again, it's always easy for people to play Monday morning quarterback. Listen, there's a very large man. Like, that was not a small man.
Yeah, no, he's a big guy.
They're talking about, stabbing people and killing people. This is still the New York City subway. I don't know because I didn't read that he was on there with his lady. From what I read, it was like super late at night. Like it was like some wee hours of the morning type shit.
Yeah.
That he was on the train. It was like in the Bronx or something.
Yeah, it was in the Bronx, but it was in the evening.
Okay.
Cause his girl is like on the, her name's Alicia Cox. She's telling about the whole shit.
But this is also not just, and what I mean by the humanity is not just the humanity of seeing someone clearly defenseless physically, clearly defenseless mentally, right?
Yeah, almost 80 years old, 78 years
right?
old.
Like this is clearly not a woman who can defend herself. This is clearly not a threat. But then also that guy to take what is clearly some sort of defense mechanism, some sort of idle threat, some sort of way that this
woman to jump out the window. Like, what are you doing, fam?
Like, to me, that's just insane. That's just that's insane.
Yeah, you took it that far.
He did it because he could.
Exactly.
Because he knew that. Because in my opinion, he didn't see a person on that train that he knew would stop him.
Yep. Yep.
If there were two 25 to 30 year old young men like of stature on that train and was standing there, I promise you this doesn't play out this way. Not even because the threat that they would interject themselves into that.
Yeah, would have stopped it.
Would have stopped him.
Yeah, like I ain't want to deal with this shit. He might have talked some shit.
He would have cursed her out. And at that point, you're just finding that line in the sand. Like, as a person who has interjected themselves in situations, there is the line in the sand that you immediately say, okay, this is my cutoff right now. Like, if he does X, Y, and Z, I have to jump in here.
Yeah, I got to go for it, Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that shit. That shit was really fucking, it really irked me. When I mentioned Wendy Williams, who's back on the air after a long absence of, I guess, mental health, kind of, for lack of a better term, and physical health. She's had some health issues, and I also think a lot of her absence on her show was just kind of trying to, deal with, she talked about dealing with maybe like a light drug relapse, and her just trying to kind of pull herself together. This comes on top of the news that her husband has had a child with his alleged mistress, and is kind of, still keeping that relationship going. Again, I guess you should say allegedly to all of this.
Right.
Wendy came on and talked about living in a sober house now, and kind of dealing with, again, like some her drug issues that she's had in the past coming back. It was very interesting because people felt a lot of, compassion for Wendy, who usually doesn't garner any sympathy because of, people's feeling like she's taken so many other people's relationships and lives through the ringer. You know what I'm saying? So, it was kind of interesting to see people feeling compassion for her, at this point. But what do you think about it, Nye? I know Sean can really talk much about it.
If you've been listening to Wendy since all the way back in her Hot 97 days through her leaving, coming back to WBLS and her ascent to TV. Her issues with substance abuse are no secret.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I will say about Wendy is that at least up until recently with this most recent situation with Kevin and this woman, Wendy's been pretty transparent about most of the struggles in her life. It's part of what connected to her to people. It's part of why people liked her, mm-hmm. Who did like her, because it was kind of like, I'm going to expose your shit, but I'm also going to expose my shit. Like, there, again, up until recent years, there really hasn't been a lot that people could get the drop on Wendy about her own situations, right?
Yeah.
So I respect that. What was confusing for me about this statement was whether she was saying she was in a sober house because, you know, she was trying, because a sober house is like a step further to me than even just I'm going to meetings or I'm in treatment. Like, you're going to a rehab facility, you're there for a couple of weeks, you go to a sober house, like, you got, like, you are trying to remove yourself from everything.
Yeah, right? and you got hard body rules.
Yeah, like, for like a more
and coming back and where you can do and where you can eat. Like, it's really regimented.
Yeah, know? For me, that's even more extreme than like I'm in rehab. Mm-hmm. Because you can go to rehab for 2 weeks and come out. Mm-hmm. For a sober house, like, we don't. She's clearly already been in there for an extended amount of time and is still there.
Yeah.
So, I wasn't really clear on, nor do I know that it's necessarily for us to know why she was there. She didn't actually say she relapsed. She spoke about struggles in the past, and she spoke about not having the tools, that she just stopped using. She didn't actually have tools, but she spoke about wanting to understand. And she really spoke more about other people, her brothers and sisters in the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So I really wasn't clear on, like, are you telling us you were tempted to use? Are you telling us, like, you did relapse? But then again, I don't know if that's important. You know, that was a hard enough truth to tell. So I admire her. And what I really admire is the fact that she and Kevin have already established an organization to help other people seek help. And I think that's a great step. And she was saying something about,
I definitely thought that was amazing.
Yeah. The Hunter Foundation,
I think it's called the Hunter Foundation. Yeah.
So I thought that action behind it to help other people, I thought that was really admirable, and I think that's dope.
I wish her well. I'm saying, like I said,
yeah,
you know, she's had a lot of, you know, issues personally and professionally, and, you know, she's definitely, you know, crossed the line and did some things that are, you know, harsh to some people's lives. So, you know, but all that being said, I still, you know, wish her well.
Yeah, and I'll also say, like, the most fucked up shit Wendy did is all more than a decade ago. Most of it was like a good 20 years
when ago. When she was on the radio.
When she was younger. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, she wasn't a child, but it is how she made her name. Like, without mm-hmm. that shit, she wouldn't have the show right now. That's just what it is. Like, before we had blogs, before we had the Shade Room, before we had any of that shit, whether you hated her or you liked her, everybody listened to Wendy at 4 o'clock. Everybody.
Yeah, you tuned in to see her.
Yeah.
You tuned in to see her and see what she had to say, you know?
I mean, to listen when she was throwing hot. You tuned in at 4 o'clock every day,
to hear what she had to say and who she was going to talk about and who she was going to expose, you know, and all that crazy shit. So, you know, it was kind of, you know, we'll see. Hopefully she's able to, you know, kind of stay clean and clear and sober and, you know, keep moving forward. And I guess she's got, you know, she's decided to deal with this alleged situation with her and her husband.
I mean, which she still hasn't addressed that I know of. And I guess she doesn't intend to.
Maybe she doesn't intend. Yeah, but I say, I don't know if she'll ever will. We'll see.
Especially if there's a child involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Her and Kevin are clearly going to do what they're going to do, so.
Yeah, so it's a rough one. Let's mention John Gray.
Mm.
Y'all man John Gray. Sean man John Gray.
Child.
Bro, you want to take this one or you want me to take it?
Nah, I'm going to let you take this one, man. This nigga, yeah, man.
So John Gray, has been accused of having a, I don't know if affair is right, the the right word, but
it's an affair. No, it's an affair. Even if what he's saying is accurate, that he did not have physical sexual relations with this woman,
it's still an affair.
He's having an affair with this woman.
Yeah,
exactly. And you're right. And I also agree with that because I listened to the woman's interview. She's on this. I forget the guy's name, Larry something. He has a podcast.
He's a whole mess too.
He's like a church podcaster. He's the guy that basically you go to for any church gospel gossip.
But he's also apparently like a prophet and
he's probably selling blessed oils and prayer cloths and all that.
Yeah.
So I had this woman on his show who alleges that her and John Gray, she said they grew up together in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. so she's known him forever since they were like teenagers, and now they she lives in Atlanta now, and they had lost touch for a long time, but they reconnected, and now they've kind of been carrying on until they got caught by John's wife finding text messages mm-hmm. on his phone of them having an affair. He was giving this woman money. He paid off her car. He would pray with her and then also kind of do like sexting things with her via the phone, via the computer. And he was booking hotel rooms for her in the same hotel as his wife and him. And they were kind of, she said they were definitely having sex. He claims they weren't, but he was, you know, speaking to her more than he should have, or whatever you want to call it. And so it's kind of blown up, and that John Gray show is ready to come on.
Well, let's back up though, because what happened is, so after John bought his wife the car and that whole thing blew up.
The Lamborghini truck.
That whole thing blew up in his face. It came out. And there was more than one woman who said that she was having a relationship with John.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I remember trying to read some woman's statement to a blog and I couldn't read it. But that woman didn't, I don't think this is the same woman. That woman actually did not say they were having an affair.
Okay.
But this, I think, is a whole other woman. And what happened is, because the show is about to come back and they've been taping through all of this shit, which irritates me because John's sitting up there the other week talking about he got haters, just want to lurk and scroll.
Yeah,
and it's like, nigga, you on TV.
I didn't even know y'all even cared about what I was doing like that.
I didn't know y'all even knew who I was. Nigga, you are on TV. Shut up.
It's like your third season of your show.
Yeah, like, come on. Like,
and before that, and also you were preaching at Joel Osteen's church, which has a television network and is seen by millions of people around the world. Stop it, my nigga.
Yeah.
Please.
So Joel and his wife go on The Real. And it's worth noting that everybody on The Real, John and his wife go on The Real. And it's worth noting that Adrian is married to Israel. Israel and John are very good friends.
Yes.
They both came up in Lakewood. Yes. Israel used to be Joel's minister of music. Mm-hmm. And I think the Maori girl is also friends with them.
Yes, she is.
So they're getting softballs, right? It's a safe space. And they actually said they were going on there because it was a safe space. So it's, did you have an affair? How long was it going on, et cetera? John says it was an emotional affair. He says he was only around the woman one time.
Come on, fam.
Right. So the woman who came out says she did so because she was watching that show.
Yeah. And was like,
watching
on,
him
man.
Denying and being like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah. Because she said they grew up together.
Yeah. Like they knew each other.
One time.
And that he was the person who basically was the pursuer.
Yes, she definitely said he was the instigator.
He was the pursuer. And you know, she released voicemails.
Yep.
Which, first of all, my nigga, you hustling backwards if you leave a voicemail anyway. Like a voicemail talking about, after you listen to this, delete this. No, that's not how
my
this
wife,
works.
My wife found our text messages.
Yeah, she knows, whatever. She knows you were in the hotel. So everything with the voicemail.
By the way, let's cut you off. She has the text messages too. She just had to release them.
Right.
Because on that same conversation, you could hear her going through them like, oh, this is January 12th. Oh, this was, so John needs a chill. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
So Johnny's a chill. And that's exactly my point. Had John initially come clean to his wife, and he and his wife dealt with this personally, none of this is happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you done been in your pulpit, you and your wife both, blaming the devil, blaming teenage Don Gray, Mm-hmm. Blaming the other woman. You done been in the Potter's house talking about you're going to commit suicide.
Blaming the haters.
You done been in the pool of blaming the haters. You done been on the real lying. You done been on the real lying, talking about some emotional affair. You done everything except be like, I fucked up.
Yep.
I'm working it out with my wife. Pray for us at this time.
Yeah, we're going through a tough time.
Keep it moving. Like, he has yet to assume any real responsibility. And that's why God is going to keep revealing shit. Because God clearly wants him to sit the fuck down. You know that this is my belief. Yeah, that God does not think he is ready.
God is trying to tell you something. And also, coming out in that interview that the woman did was that John Gray apparently really doesn't like his wife.
His wife. I believe at that.
All. Like, he doesn't like her as a person. He feels like she's very materialistic. He feels like she's very lazy. She's not sexual. Like, and I'm not saying that, you know, he hasn't done things to contribute to her maybe being this way. I'm just saying what she said. She said that he doesn't like her. So if that is the case, there's no question he's going to do this again because he's with somebody he doesn't like.
Yeah, she was the first person he ever had sex with, allegedly, or at least consensual sex with. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, it's a whole.
You know, he's got some money and some attention. He's not an attractive man. He's not a smooth man. So, you know, all of this shit is, he's just ill prepared. He's ill prepared for all of this. All of it.
Go ahead, bro. I know you got something to say.
I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this guy, man, because to me, in my opinion, his behavior has been weak, and I'll explain. Being weak of the flesh, being weak and not really being able to deal with a level of attention that you're not really used to is not something that I would define as making a person weak.
Mm-hmm.
Doing something to hurt someone, to put someone in the crosshairs for your selfish reasons and then not standing in that shit and not being
right.
And not being a man to take those arrows and those slings that are coming for the people that have to pick up your shit, that's a problem for me.
Yeah.
That's the sign of a weak man to me. Like a man who can't own his shit, who can't, you know, like he's over there picking at a scab when he needs to rip that fucking thing off and start a fresh one. You know what I'm saying? And start to heal properly. And look, far be it from me to tell anybody how to run their household, right? But yeah, you know, like, I have a fundamental problem with not even just John Gray. I have a fundamental problem with celebrity pastors. I just think that it is impossible for you to really lead your flock. Like apparently he's a teaching minister at Lakewood still.
And oh, really? How do you even do that?
I read that today in one of the articles I was reading, and I was like, okay, so he's still a teaching minister because they were basically, this particular article was saying they were trying to, get interviews and ask him some questions, some follow-ups and things like that. He would decline. It was always a schedule. He's got to go here. He's got to go there. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, pastoring Sunday is only part of the job.
A small part.
It's part of the job. It's not the job.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And so I'm always leery when the pastor is being pulled in 19 different directions, especially in churches like these. I'm not a fan of those big churches anyway. You know, there's no personal connection for me.
Yeah.
But when I look at this dude, man, like I look at somebody who does not deal with fame well, who does not deal with attention well, he doesn't handle it well. He looks uncomfortable to me. He doesn't look natural.
No.
And I've said this before, man, I just think he's a jive ass nigga, man. Like, I just think he's a, you know, I don't really know
another way to
say it. He's a jive. Like, and you know what I mean by that? It's just like, it's always something that it ain't. with a dude like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And that's what came out. That's what came out. That's always another.
But also too, man, like that is so honestly, man, I don't know a lot of women that would a lot of women would have probably preferred you just fucking have sex than go telling this woman that you don't fucking you hate my guts.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like, just go get some pussy, man. Like,
what
you gotta do. Come on.
Yeah. Like, don't be telling her that, nigga. Like,
he was pillow talking like a motherfucker.
Yeah, and you know what, man? It is what it is. And yeah, you know what? Your wife is materialistic, right? You don't like her. You don't like that, right? So which one is it? Is it materialistic because that's the stuff that she wants, or is it materialistic because you the one that copped the Lamborghini Jeep?
Exactly.
For 200 grand.
Exactly.
So is it Gucci Wally or one mic?
Exactly.
Which one is it?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, I'm living in a $1.8 million crib that the church is paying for.
But she's materialistic.
But she's materialistic. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to really grasp this dude's angle, man. And like, honestly, like, your shit's out there because your shit's out there. You put it out there, okay? You exposed your wife to the world. You exposed your relationship to the world. And this is why I always said that whole building a brand based on your marriage shit is wildly, it's dangerous.
Because everybody expects you to be the beacon of perfection and the beacon of virtue and all times, and nobody's like that on either side. Everybody's gonna slip up and make a mistake, and it might not be. I mean, it doesn't have to be cheating or anything like that. It can just be anything. Like, it just be something that's just gonna make it look like you're human, and now all of a sudden your shit's fucked up.
And I just need him to go sit down, dude. Go to men's group. Okay, lead men's group down to the church
on Wednesday night.
go coach the kids.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Throw the football around in the backyard. Go mentor some young men down at the local high school.
But you know he ain't gonna do that though because he loves this fame and now his TV show's coming on. So he's
that's
happy.
That's my point. You on the real, you got book signings, you got book tours, you on stage, you doing all of this shit, and then you hate all of the things that come with it.
You hate the consequences.
You don't get to pick and choose. Like, this is the life that, you know, like, listen, I say this all the time. Like, when people want to say, yo, you know, we want to go here, when you guys book your vacation, and I'm like, yo, vacation don't work like that for us.
Yeah.
I can't book no vacation 6 months. I don't know what my life is.
You don't know what's going to be.
But that's the life we chose. We don't eat dinner at 6 p.m. at the table.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? That's not the life we chose.
Exactly.
And that is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. It's what comes with it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it comes with it. So yeah, so I mean, I am going to tune into his season. I ain't going to lie and say
I don't watch that shit. But John Gray is in for a humbling though. I'm telling you that. And if he thinks we can keep like they haven't spoken on this yet and I'm waiting for them to. But like if he thinks him and his wife haven't spoken on Homegirl releasing the text messages. I mean, voice note, I think. Yeah, but if he thinks he can keep skirting this shit, he got another thing coming.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know, man. Sheesh. Let's talk about, let me check my time. And okay, got time for one more. And maybe like a little mention. I want to mention, we just need to mention the Mueller report came out. And of course, Trump and all his peoples are, you know, saying that it proves that he was innocent, and it really does not at all. It does not at all, actually. You know what I'm saying? It just proves that they couldn't prove without a shadow of a doubt that he was involved, but it doesn't say that he was innocent. And I think there's a lot of I'm positive there's a ton of devastating things in that report because Mitch McConnell will not allow the report to be released.
To come out, A lot of devastating things came out during hearing. Like, we know that he instructed people to commit perjury on his behalf. Like, there's a lot of other things that have already been revealed besides whether or not he 100% colluded or obstructed justice.
Like, his people are in jail.
But here's the thing, though. Like,
We know how to.
We're operating in a space of technicalities right now, right? Like at the end of the day, there was a 2-year. If you put this on black and white, there was a 2-year investigation from an independent investigator,
and nothing came of it.
And nothing came of it. Yeah. That, I mean, you got to ride that as an exoneration. What I'm saying is that Mueller did not say you should indict. I mean, that's as good as saying,
right,
there's nothing to see here. And that, and unfortunately, that is how history is going to see it. There was investigation and nothing came of it.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Because all of the other people that have gone to jail have gone to jail for things they've done outside of the campaign.
They've not technically
gone to jail for anything that they've done under his, you know, under the guise of being in that organization and in that campaign.
Wow. Wow. So, this is coupled with Michael Avenatti wilding out and getting charged with extortion and fraud charges for trying to extort Nike for $20 million, really kind of sadly pushes Trump's reelection bid into overdrive. Like, it's kind of like, you know, his people are going to rally around him even harder because, like you said, Sean, it looks like it was a witch hunt. You know what I'm saying? It looks like that this lawyer that was going after Stormy Daniels is a fucking, you know, ambulance chasing piece of shit. So,
and here's another thing that we often do as Americans. Those things can both be true. He did fuck Stormy Daniels. He did pay hush money. He
right.
Absolutely. Those things.
Right, right,
and
right.
Michael is an ambulance chaser. He is an opportunist.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's hard for people to sometimes separate the two.
Exactly.
Last thing I wanted to mention, we're going to keep it kind of light and gossipy, I guess, is Jess Hilarious.
Do we really need to talk about her?
Wait, what were you going to say? What'd you say, Sean?
Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo, yeah. He was just mentioned Jess Hilarious. And now he was already over it.
I'm just like, does she really deserve a mention?
I mean, a mention. It was a trending story for a little bit of time. And she's a comedian from Baltimore who's rose to fame on Instagram and is now on the Lil Rel show and has been kind of shooting herself in the foot by doing insane shit on Instagram, you know, her weapon of choice. She said the F word about a guy who commented on a post that she made. Last week she came out and was gloating about helping getting some Sheikh men who she called Muslims kicked off a plane because she was scared and, you know, kind of dug her heels in and said she didn't give a fuck and I don't care what y'all think. I don't care. I was scared. She immediately got destroyed on social media and issued to me, a very questionable apology. Seemed to be pretty fake.
I thought her statement was thorough. I just thought her reasoning and timing was
perfect. When she was crying and shit, yeah. I ain't seen no tears. Her eyes wasn't red. Like, whatever, you know. The reason I wanted to bring it up was not necessarily just about her, but it was just the kind of about this space that we're in with this kind of, like, these internet sensation and these kind of internet comedian sensations, too, like, who are, like, you know, kind of shirking the system and kind of getting their way into things by being, like, internet funny, like the girl who's on Boomerang. I forget her name now. And there's a couple of others as well. And that's making a lot of, like, comedians who have worked a long time mad because they feel like they're taking their shots. And how, like, a lot of those people are just not prepared to deal with not being more the internet celebrity.
Yeah, not at all. Plus, being internet funny is a much lower bar than being real funny.
Yeah, because you only got to be funny on the internet for a few seconds.
And you don't have to be very smart about it.
No, you can just be crass and rude or whatever if that's your thing. And again,
and that's what Jess is learning because her comedy is kind of insult and shot based.
Mm-hmm.
And
gossip, you know, based, talking about celebrities and stuff. So,
yeah.
What you got anything to say about it, bro?
I mean, what she said was stupid. I mean, and honestly,
and doubled down on it.
I was going to say what she said would have not been as bad if she didn't double down. It was the second and third video. It was her, And then the crying and apology thing was really kind of weird because, like, no one prompted you to go that hard on that second and third video.
Exactly.
Like, there was no reason for you to do that. And then you sat and it was like, well, I didn't say anything. I didn't get anyone kicked off the plane. That's not really the context in what you was trying to insinuate in that video.
Not at all.
Like now you playing us for dumb? Like, come on.
We didn't see what we saw.
You know, right. so listen, I get it. Not everybody, and listen, not everyone is well traveled, right? And this is another thing, right? Because, you know, she's not that old, right? And I think that this is probably in the last 5 years, her life has changed tenfold.
Dramatically, yeah.
Absolutely.
Right? So we're talking
in
about some
2 years, shit. I know it's been
we're talking about somebody that was, you know, thinking about, you know, vacation for them was, you know, packing up in the Ford Taurus, yeah. Maybe in riding down 95.
Going to Georgia.
Yeah,
going to Eastern Shore, Maryland or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Like that. So now, you know, her level of travel, so would she, you know, people often, it is not uncommon for people to mistake Sikhs for Muslims. That happens a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm just not saying she's not alone and not understanding that there was a difference. But the fact that even if there wasn't a difference, the fact that you thought that that was an appropriate thing to say or do or to even think is mm-hmm. crazy. And, yeah. And it's even crazier as a black person.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
What you're saying.
Exactly. Like nigga, like you, we all 4 seconds away from the marshals coming on a plane to get us off. Cause
exactly.
Nigga on a plane getting pulled over, getting
exactly.
Whatever.
Anything.
Yeah,
nigga, you know what this is. Why would you participate in that?
Exactly.
You know
what I'm saying?
Exactly. So that, but you know what? Those are, to me, you know, and I don't know her. So again, I say this as, you know, just based on what I see, you know, those are character things. That's something that's mm-hmm. been sitting in your spirit. That mm-hmm. shit's been weighing on you, yeah. Right? That's something that you do or say or enact on regularly. And it just sort of, spilled out probably at you know, the worst possible time for you. But, you know, look, man, she, I mean, it is what it is. I don't really know. You know, she made that donation. Listen, you know,
15 grand.
God bless, right? Those people, you know, I'm sure those families can, you know, use that. And hopefully she learns a lesson from this that, you know, you don't have making mistakes isn't the issue. Being an asshole after you make the mistake yeah. is really the
yeah.
issue.
Yeah. So last thing I want to mention is Lonzo Ball, who has severed ties with the Big Baller Brand company because it came out that his father's business partner, Alan Foster, who owns 16% of the company, was allegedly stealing money from him and just, you know, committing fraud. You want to run with this one a little bit, bro?
Yeah. I mean, basically, Big Baller Brand, you know, is owned 51 Cent by Lonzo. And it comes out that the business manager sent an email to LeVar and back in October, I believe it was,
October.
In the fall. So in October, he sends an email saying, hey, there's $1.5 million, like, unaccounted for. And so, you know, basically LeVar never answers the email.
Yeah.
Even though his son is like, nigga.
Yeah, his son is kind of like prodding, like, hey, I'm getting these messages saying yeah. this is this. And, you know, then after that, he does some due diligence. And so apparently Alan Foster had done some time, was convicted of mail fraud, a couple of federal financial crimes he had done time for, which really raised the question for me as to how was he a signer on this
right.
yeah. account.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Where he could just take money like this.
Yeah, like how was that set up? I mean, listen, I'm not a financial advisor in any capacity, and I know a little bit about a little bit. Sometimes these companies are not all stop shops. Some of them are just operating in terms of wealth management, and they look at bigger portfolios and they sort of direct you on that sort of stuff. Some of them deal with your day-to-day business, right? Like literally paying your bills, having access to your accounts. There's a bit of a process when it comes to that sort of stuff as to who is a signer. Are there maxes on the account? Do you need double signatures after certain mm-hmm. amounts?
Right.
There are just checks and balances normally that occur. And then the other question becomes the actual bank. Like, I don't know what bank he banks at, right? But normally an institution, right, like a teller would be trained. A teller is trained to spot structuring. And for those of you that don't know, structuring is when you try to circumvent the $10,000 rule, right? Mm. We all know.
A little bit of cash here.
Yes.
$9,000 there.
Yes. So what happens is that when accounts are monitored in that way, right? So if you say are a regular business person, right, and you're coming to the bank every week without fail to withdraw $7,500, I don't have to fill out that IRS report, but based on your business and based on the amount of money that's flowing in and out, I probably need to run this up the flagpole of structure.
Yeah.
And then that person takes it to their manager. They take it to the bank, and then sort of the higher ups at the corporate level would then step in. So I was always kind of interested as to how $1.5 million.
That's a lot of bread. That's a lot of bread.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of cash.
Yeah.
That's a lot of
cash.
And you say if he's
taking 1.5 out, he's not just going to get $7,500 every time.
Right.
It's like that's what he's I'm getting saying. 15 grand, he's getting 50 grand, he's getting 70 grand.
Yeah, I was getting ready. That's what I was getting ready to say. He's getting the kind of money that you have to call the bank ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He ain't getting $500 out.
That's not a withdrawal. Like most banks will tell you, like, listen, if you come in to get anything over like $5,000, call us, give us a heads up, so we can have it prepared and all of that sort of stuff so they can make sure that you might walk up on a teller. Teller might not have that, especially if you go with a $25,000 fucking withdrawal slip.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, again, this to tie this all up in a knot, it's kind of like what we talked about with his dad, LeVar. And, you know, we all had skepticism about this company. Apparently, Alan Foster is the person who talked LeVar into Big Baller Brand and declining, the whatchamacallit, the sneaker deals that were on the table for Lonzo. And
my cousin work over Nike. He gonna give me the plug to the guy. Yes.
Right, we go right in China.
Right in China. My man over there all the time.
So of course, all of this sort of makes sense now. And again, you know, look, I think a lot of things about LeVar. I don't think he's a smart man. I think he's an asshole by nature. I think he's one of those guys that thinks he knows way more than he actually knows.
Yeah.
But one thing I never thought of, I never thought of him as a not a loving father. I always thought that he thought what he was doing was best for his kids, even though we thought it wasn't good. I think he was able to stand in that. This looks like this is going to be affecting them as a family.
Absolutely.
Which really is kind of sad.
Apparently the sons are like on the dad's neck right now. Like, yo, yeah. Man, like, what are you doing? Like, we told you this shit was whack and we told you we didn't like this nigga and blah, blah, blah.
All of those things are happening. You know, look, the reality is that Lonzo is footing the bill for all of this shit.
This is a
failing company. I have not seen one person with those shoes on. People have still not gotten their shoes that they've ordered, you know, 7-8 months ago.
Right.
Yeah, I've never seen those shoes live. Like you said, I've never seen one person.
I've not even seen a person on IG with them. Like, right. I've never seen the shoes.
Never.
So I'm just kind of fascinated as to how this was able to even happen. So I'm sure that this business was swimming in debt. Who knows when all of the hammers drop, what that's going to mean for Lonzo, because I'm sure he's the guarantor.
He's on the hook.
He's on the hook as the guarantor of any loans and things like that. it also indicates that they might not have had the, you know, he was also a part of the sports agency that they had going on. So, you know, look, Lonzo is not only dealing with, you know, some personal shit, he's also in a weird space in his career. He's being dangled out as trade bait. He's in the second, you know, he's just finishing up the second year of his rookie contract, which means his third year is a shit to get off the pot year. If he has a bad year, man, there's no guarantee the Lakers re-sign him.
Yeah. You know,
so I feel for the kid. I hope that that family can figure it out. I don't take any glee in this I told you so, but this is right in line. And what it really does is it hurts Black folks in terms of dealing with high net worth people,
mm-hmm.
and what we like to call well-heeled.
Yeah.
It sort of bleeds into that yeah. thing. And I think yeah. that what we all, you know, one of the things that I've talked about before is how predators, and this is what I would consider Allen Foster as a predator. What he does is when they find that one thing, they latch onto it. And mm-hmm. what I think he found was that he, you know, LeVar wanted this to work and be a Black business. He mm-hmm. wanted this to, and he was going to ignore every red flag that could have possibly come up in order to do that.
Allen played on that. He knew that.
Allen played on that. Yeah. He knew yeah, that.
Fucking crackers, man.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Fuck exactly. Nike, man. Motherfuckers on, man. We got the hood behind us, yes. brother. You yes. know what I'm saying?
Exactly. All that barbershop nigga shit. Yeah. So, you know, I had some questions that really couldn't be answered because I was also like, you know, as a business manager, I think when you can't find $1.5 million, like, so. Did we change the account? Like,
yeah,
at what point?
Was it at the flag? When did the flag raise?
When did the flag raise? Who's taking care of what? Because it would not, you know, like, and if he was a signer on a business account, why would the business account have that much liquid assets if they weren't generating any money, right? Like, how, I just have so many different, like, sort of, like, technical questions on the checks and balances. But listen, Big Baller Brand was a failure. He shot his shot. It was, you know, poor marketing, poor material. You know, being loud and being all over the place isn't always a good thing. It's not always the best thing.
Definitely
the kid didn't
not.
Even wear the sneak. The kid didn't even wear the sneak.
He didn't wear them.
And
they said that he wore them a couple of times, and they said, I mean, this is all rumor and speculation. But they're saying that people are saying that might have been one of the reasons that he had injuries.
No, no bullshit. They're saying that they are not structurally made in a way that's conducive for that level of play.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Like they're a shoe that they're like a sneaker, like a walking shoe, like that. Like
exactly.
If you take a fucking, you know, like a Roshi, it's like a nigga playing ball in a Roshi run. It's like, yeah, that's not a basketball shoe. It's not designed the same way.
And then like in the old man fives that you see, the old folks white with the white joint. Yeah.
The Monarch.
You're the Monarch. Monarch. Seems to be playing ball in them shits. They don't you know it. Crazy.
Yeah. So yeah, that listen, that plays a part into it. I hope that Matt, listen, I know that LeBron and I know that Magic are big on trying to, you know, bring, I don't think they want to see that kid fail.
Right.
I think they're going to do everything they can. They're going to do everything they can within their power to make sure that that kid is straight.
Well, I think right now, this is going to take, for lack of a better term, they're going to take advantage of this situation and be like, hey, bro, listen, you just got burned for 1.5. And you need to come over here, sit with us, and let us show you how to get your shit together and stop fucking around with your dad with this bullshit.
And what's crazy is he shot his load because his stock in terms of sneakers, I don't think it's ever going to be as high as it was before he played.
Never, never, never.
Because he's, you know,
he's not that good a player.
Taking the league by storm. He's not taking the league by storm.
Yeah, exactly. So,
and for all you suck ass niggas that was out there talking about self hate.
Yeah.
Y'all don't
ever
want to see a Black man do well.
Yeah.
Look,
right.
man, like we know what the fuck we know. Okay.
Exactly. And we know some fuckery when we see it from our community. And we can see that shit a mile away.
This is a mile away.
This is fuckery. So yeah, so peace, Alonzo. Good luck. And we're gonna wrap it up on that note.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see y'all next week. Hopefully by next week I'll be doing this from my own apartment.
We'll be in prayer.
And maybe I have a housewoman have your niggas over for some Kool-Aid and some Charles' fried chicken.
Nah, I feel like you're the type of nigga to kick people out like Martin.
Y'all got to go.
What y'all finna do?
Where y'all about to go?
I'm gonna be good, like, all right then.
Little Ronnie's good, clean white folks, and y'all ain't gonna mess up my good thing. So we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Right, peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast. Talk to you next week.